brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
What's up, guys? That's right, you found your way to part two. My name is James Gutman. You are listening to JG's Radio Free Insanity. Today it's Friday. It's March the 24th. It is 2006, and we are about to be joined on the phone line by the X Division champion of total nonstop action, the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels, probably one of the most requested guests that we've had for the show every week. Somebody says, man, just get Chris Daniels, get Curry Man or Chris Daniels, whoever you can get, just get him on the show. So that's what we got. We're going to have him on the phone line in just a few minutes. Really quick, I just want to answer some questions that I was getting on the message board for a little bit, explain to you guys a little bit more about the books and things that people might not know about it. One of the questions that I did get was from our own Mike Rickard, who wanted to know if I go into the situation with Triple H and Randy Orton in the new book, World Wrestling Insanity, available at Amazon and everywhere else. Actually, one of the things about the book, and I haven't really gone into the specifics of what's inside yet, is that I do state my opinion on Triple H, which a lot of people know that I have a very strong opinion on Hunter Hearst Helmsley, his place in the company, and where he's been since marrying into the family. And, you know, there's always a lot of debate back and forth. Now, I'm not one of these people. I never tell you that, well, I'm going to give you decisive proof that Triple H is a politician. What I'm going to do is I'm going to state my case. I have an opinion. I give you my opinion. And then I give you as much analysis and facts as I can to back up that opinion. And it's way more than I think anybody's expecting. So by the end of the time, by the end of the book, you guys can kind of formulate your own opinion on the game and where he stands. But, I mean, there's going to be an abundance of what I like to call evidence. I don't know what you can call it, but yeah, never before do I think has there been this much analysis and evidence to back up one of my statements about Triple H. Actually, I know there hasn't been. So Randy Orton's definitely a part of that. Consider it the case against Triple H. That's going to be in the book. Lots of things in there. We're going to be analyzing the personalities of the McMahon family, see how the business ended up the way it is, see how things ended up the way they are, and the creative direction of WWE, which is really the most important thing in this book. I mean, World Wrestling Insanity, and one of the things about insanity is it's doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. So, I mean, that's kind of the gist of the book. No way. I mean, people have asked about this, too. I mean, I'm not saying the company's going to die. I know, you know, everybody's saying, well, how could they be dead? Is it like death of WCW? It's not like that. This is just really... Anybody who's watched the program from the late 90s till now knows that there's been a decisive drop in the quality and the creativity of the TV shows and the creative direction and things like that with the company. I mean, the morale in the locker room has gone from high as hell to, you know, low as hell, I guess. Hell would work on both those counts. Well, anyway, high and to low in the WWE locker room. So there's got to be reasons for that. There's got to be different things that have happened within the company, and that's what we kind of look into. But also little things, too, like you guys are going to find out a lot of things about behind-the-scenes situations at WWE that I don't remember ever seeing reported anywhere else. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely telling you guys this is going to be really top to bottom. Look at the McMahon Empire, a look at the World Wrestling Entertainment, unlike anything you've ever seen. So be sure, to go grab it. Amazon is on pre-order right now. It's on sale. We're going to be having some more information about the book as we get closer. As it stands right now, guys, you're only about maybe 2 months away from the release date, so we're very excited. Everything is moving really smoothly, so we're very happy about it. World Wrestling Insanity, the book, available anywhere you can grab it. Take a look. Pick it up and let us know what you think once you do. All right, guys, now that we got that out of the way, it's time to bring him on the phone line. He is the X Division champion of Total Nonstop Action, one of the guys who has been really tearing the house down over and over again in TNA alongside Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, someone known for capturing titles in Ring of Honor, overseas, you name it, and Chris Daniels has been there and has wrestled the best. So we're going to welcome him to the show. Guys, join me in welcoming to the broadcast the TNA X Division Champion, the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels. Chris, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. Just staying busy, staying healthy like I try to do.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. You're actually one of the one of the most requested guests that we've had since we started this. Every week people have been asking if we can get Chris Daniels on the show, so we figure you got the X Division title around your waist. We'll bring you on and talk a little bit about that.
Excellent. Here I am.
Well, let me ask you about that. I mean, a lot of wrestlers throughout time, they always talk about, you run into two kinds of wrestlers. You find those that are still excited about getting titles, and then you find those that talk about, you know, well, it's just extra luggage to cart around. Now, you're the new X Division champion. How does it feel? Has the effect of winning titles worn off you yet, or do you still kind of get giddy when you get a new championship?
Well, I feel like it's kind of like conviction from the company that you're working for, that they have faith in you as a performer, as an athlete, to kind of carry the banner of the company. So, I mean, that means something to me, and it actually means a lot to me. So, I mean, yeah, I'm still giddy about it. I don't know if I, like, dance around and hug the belt to my chest 24/7, but I'm certainly happy to have the opportunity to be a champion for a company that I enjoy working for. So
that's good. It's actually probably got to be pretty cool, too, especially at this point, to win the X Division title right off of Samoa Joe, who kind of brought a lot of attention to it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, working the program with Joe and AJ was a lot of fun, and I don't think it's quite finished yet, but we'll see. I'm just happy that I'm working with guys that I respect like those two, and that we're putting out good matches and good television, so.
Let me ask you this, because we've had AJ and Samoa Joe on, and we've asked them kind of the same questions, and you're the third person, I guess, in that trio that we can ask the same question to. Is it hard going into a match like you had with Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, knowing that so many eyes are going to be on you guys, thinking that you're going to be the match to steal the show? Is it kind of hard to live up to that each time?
Well, I try not to look at it like that. I try to just look at it like I go out there and have a good match and you know, just do our best. I mean, I don't ever look at something like, you know, let's go out and steal the show. It's kind of selfish, I feel. You know, I just feel like all of us are out there, everybody that's on the show itself is out there to just put their best match forward. And, you know, it's kind of up to the fans who says what the best match is. It's not up to us. So I just feel like, you know, my job is to go out there and give 110% and try to put the best match out there that I can do. And I know AJ and Joe feel the same way. And I think that's one of the reasons why we gel so well, is that we're all in it to make the match as best as we can.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been involved in so many of TNA's most memorable matches. I mean, especially one that springs to mind immediately is when you were with Elix Skipper, and you guys took on America's Most Wanted in both of those cage matches. I mean, what was that like, being in TNA's first cage match and kind of setting the bar for everybody against America's Most Wanted?
It meant a lot to me in the sense that they made it the main event of the pay-per-view we were on. So, I mean, it put a lot of pressure on us to perform. But at the same time, like I said earlier, it's something that shows that they have faith in you as an athlete, as a wrestler, to make you the main event of a show like that. So, you know, I feel like whenever they've given me that opportunity to kind of show that I belong in a main event spot, or that I deserve an opportunity to be a main eventer, I feel like I've proven them right, at least, you know, up to this point. So, I mean, it means a lot that they have faith in me, and I try to reciprocate that and show them that that their faith is warranted in me.
Mm-hmm. We talked about you main eventing the shows, and now you're doing the program with AJ and Joe with the X Division title. So, I mean, you've had success at both doing tag team wrestling with Donovan Morgan and Ring of Honor and things like that, and Triple X, and now in singles. Do you think a lot of wrestlers today understand the difference in psychology between working a tag match and a singles match?
I don't know. It seems like the business has kind of gotten away from tag team wrestling in the last couple of years. I mean, it's very rare to get a team like America's Most Wanted, you know, where they kind of focus on being a team, or Team 3D. Like, those guys have made their reputations and their living at being a team, rather than like myself, who's kind of floated in and out of teams as circumstances have warranted. So I feel like a lot of wrestlers maybe don't make it a difference until they're in a position where they have to be in a team. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I've always felt like the part of being a team is you know, complimenting your partner as far as like your work, and trying to bring the best out of each other as a team, rather than going out there and you know, try to be the star of a team or try to outshine your own partner. And, you know, and I think guys like America's Most Wanted and Team 3D, obviously they've got that idea where they're out there as a unit and they're complementing each other's work and making the unit as a whole shine. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I mean, do you think it comes down to just the way a lot of the kids are trained today? And that, I mean, we asked AJ, I'll ask you this too. So many guys kind of look to your matches and don't really take from it the psychology of the situation, and then when they go out there, especially these indie shows, they just kind of try to fit as many high spots into a match as possible. Do you think that that's kind of a lot of the indie guys are losing their focus on what makes a good match?
Well, I think the problem that a lot of indie guys get into is the fact that they're trying to get themselves over so that they become a commodity and something, you know, something that promoters want to use. And so sometimes they're not necessarily looking at the best way to have a match as much as they're trying to ensure future bookings for themselves. And I mean, that's a tough spot to be in when you, you know, you can go out there and have like what's best for the match, but it might not, it might be a case where having the best match means you don't do everything that you are able to do as a wrestler. And sometimes I feel like one of the last things that independent wrestlers learn is the discipline to say, well, I can do all of this stuff, but I don't need to do it in every match. I shouldn't do it in every match. And, you know, and like I said, it's a tough spot to be in where you feel the need to go out there and kind of blow your wad in every match you do until you get to the point where you are in demand as a commodity rather than, you know, you're trying to find a spot. Once you've got a spot, it's a lot easier to kind of, you know, not coast, but at least pick and choose the times where you're going to throw your best stuff out there and you know, the types of match that you're going to wrestle in, that type of thing.
I mean, it's kind of a scary situation, too, for a lot of these guys, because if, you know, you're to slow it down a little bit, you kind of give yourself a longer career. But, I mean, these high spots, people just see them and they think that they're seamless. But in reality, there's a lot of danger involved.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, any of the risks that we take are you know, they're dangerous in any respect. And, I mean, for any one of us to go out there and, you know, we all have to have the long term in mind. We have to have the big picture in mind. And, I mean, you can't really go out there and risk your life on one show when you know that you've got shows coming up and that's your living. So it's difficult. It's a difficult spot for indie guys to be in, where they're trying to make this their living and trying to make the transition where they're making this their number one priority and this their job.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you about, I mean, you were involved in probably one of the more well-known kind of issues with a situation like that when you had gone on Nitro with Michael Modest. I remember watching it back in college. And, I mean, nowadays people, you know, they know you as really just one of these guys that can pull off, you know, these moves and make it effortless. But you would have that issue with Modest where you really almost hurt yourself with that Acai moonsault on that edition of Nitro. What goes through your mind as a performer when, you know, you're in this position, you're on Nitro, you're kind of getting a tryout, and you hit a move that for a split second you think could have really been a lot worse than it is? What goes through a wrestler's mind at a point like that?
Well, I mean, I actually did kind of get pretty badly hurt at that time, but I mean, at the moment, you know, you never want to, like, fold up and give up. You just go out there and finish the match as best you can, so, but, yeah, I mean, it was one of those situations where we were kind of basically told, go out there and do everything and show us everything you got. And, you know, and we tried to go out there and do that. And I ended up paying for it, trying to do a little bit more than I should have or you know, something that I wasn't necessarily 100% proficient at that time. So, yeah, I ended up paying for it. I mean, if there's ever any example of, you know, working safe versus risking everything just for an opportunity, I mean, that's definitely one of them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're in TNA right now, but let me ask you this. I know that you've done the stint in WWE where you were one of the conquistadors, but I mean, someone of your size, if you really looked at it, do you think WWE, if you were working there, would know how to use you, or do you think that you would kind of be in that Paul London position if you were in that spot?
Well, it seems like WWE goes through stages where they want to give guys that are kind of my style of wrestler. I mean, cruiserweight or X Division, whatever you want to say. They go through stages where they tease those guys in a certain way, and then it just kind of, and then slowly but surely it kind of falls away. I mean, Paul is a perfect example. Like, for a while they had the tag belts on him at SmackDown, and they had a really good angle going with him and Billy Kidman, and then it just kind of floated away, and then it came back to where they wanted to put the cruiserweight belt on him, and they had a decent little angle with him and Chavo going, and then slowly but surely that kind of faded to the background. So I think it just kind of goes through stages, and I don't know if it's necessarily like that way with every cruiserweight or not. I mean, sometimes it feels like it depends on the wrestler you're talking about, whether they're giving them an opportunity or not. And I could point to Kid Cash as another example. Like, as good as Kid Cash is, I don't know if they've actually given him the opportunity to do the best that he can do, or at least showcase him as good as he's able to be showcased. You know what I mean?
Amen.
I mean, they put the strap on him, but it's not like they've really gone out of their way to put the spotlight on him as much spotlight as he could use, I don't know. It's weird. It's like, it depends on the day, it seems, sometime at WWE, whether or not the cruiserweights or even just any of the talent is getting a fair shake or is being used to their fullest potential.
See, it's actually funny because when you first answered, you had said something that I was going to lead into. You'd said cruiserweight or X Division. And one of the funny things about the X Division is that it's so kind of hard to define to people, and that there's no real weight limit on it. Yet,
right.
It's actually it's gotten over far better than WWE's cruiserweight division, and in some ways, WCW's cruiserweight division for all the years it was around. Do you think it was a matter of finally a company stepping in and taking the weight limitation off of it and taking it away from people thinking, well, these are the small guys, and instead making them think that it was a different style of wrestling?
Well, I mean, it's always been a different style of wrestling. I don't think anybody had an idea otherwise. I just feel like it just came down to the fact that TNA decided to try and focus on those guys as a legitimate division rather than looking at them as afterthoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of times it seems like, whatever you want to call it, X Division or Cruiserweight, at WWE, it just seems to be like almost like filler sometimes to them. Like,
yeah.
Okay, we've got to do something in between these two matches, why don't we put a Cruiserweight group out there? So, I mean, I think it's just a matter of perception. And I mean, the fans are going to believe what they're told, and when a company tells you that these performances don't matter, these performers don't matter, sooner or later the fans will believe that. And I mean, NA has always said that the X Division guys matter, and they're incredible athletes, they put on incredible athletic performances. And so people, if TNA looks like they care about the X Division, then the fans of TNA will come to care about the X Division.
Yeah.
And vice versa, if WWE looks like they don't care, then sooner or later the fans of WWE also won't care about the Cruiserweights.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny that you brought that up because it almost seems that in the industry, and I mean, TNA now, they're focusing very heavily on the X Division, but even originally when they would do the eight-man tags and WWE as well with the Cruiserweights, it almost feels like you have more of a chance of being pushed in WWE if you're a big guy with less wrestling ability. And with guys who can kind of go out there and hold their own in the ring, it's more of a feeling of, well, they'll entertain the fans. We don't really have to do anything to promote them otherwise. And it's almost like
right.
Liability, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, it just seems like the mentality in WWE is to kind of train in-house rather than take the guys that have the experience and let them use that as best they can, or at least complement their experience. Sometimes it just seems like they would rather take a guy brand new and try and build them up from scratch rather than take a guy who's had a certain level of experience and use that as best they can.
Uh-huh. Do you think that's more of an ego thing, kind of not wanting to admit that other promotions or companies can make stars besides themselves?
I don't know. I mean, I guess if you kind of look at the history of it, the guys that came in from WCW, they kind of languished for a little while, and then slowly but surely, they started to get more of the the company behind them. So, but it seems also to be like by case by case. It's not like a. It doesn't seem like it's necessarily a company-wide thing where if you started out somewhere else, you automatically go through a period of you know, being buried or being misused or whatever. I think it's just, I don't know. Like I said, it seems to be day-to-day sometimes with WWE, the way they're going to use their guys.
Well, let me ask you about this. Fans who might not be familiar with you outside of TNA, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about the Curry Man and how that came about?
The Curry Man is a masked character that I was doing in Japan since 99. And it was based on a cartoon character called Curry Cook. And basically this guy had a plate of curry and rice on his head. And so that's what the mask is that I wear. It's basically a plate of food. And it seemed like they wanted this character to be very serious, but to me it seems kind of contradictory to have this guy with such a ridiculous style of mask to go out there and be a straight, serious character. So, like, over the years, I try to modify it so that it's got a little bit of, not necessarily comedy, but definitely, like, lightheartedness about it. And so I go out there and try to do, you know, stuff that would bring smiles, or at least, like, it seems to be, like, the sports entertainment style to a country and a company that don't necessarily embrace sports entertainment. So, Kerman's been in a couple of Ring of Honor shows, you know, and it seems like right now that's kind of like where the audience for Kerman would be, in a company where they have a strong idea of what goes on over in the Orient. So, I won't say that he's never going to come back, but I don't know when the next time he would be.
Now, you've done a lot of work in Ring of Honor. How would you rate kind of that environment? It's obviously a different atmosphere than wrestling in some other companies.
Well, I think that I think that Gabe and Ring of Honor as a company have a really strong long-term plan to the guys that they're using and the type of product that they're putting out there. So, I mean, I appreciate guys that come to the table with the amount of preparation that those guys have. And, I mean, you got to be honest and look at the locker room and look at the guys there and just say that it's one of the most talented rosters around. And, I'm proud of the stuff that I've done there, and I'm proud of the guys that I've worked there. And I think a lot of them are, if they're not stars already, they're definitely future stars.
Absolutely. I mean, it seems like the audience there especially is kind of, you have to be on bring your A game when you go in front of them, otherwise they'll let you have it.
Yeah, expectations are high. Expectations are high at Ring of Honor, but that's just the lay of the land there.
Let me ask you this: growing up, and even coming into the business, who were some of your influences or some of the wrestlers you looked up to early on in your career?
When I first started getting trained, I'd have to say Shawn Michaels was definitely somebody that I tried to emulate. To the point of straight out impersonation sometimes. But yeah, definitely his work rate, his athleticism was something that I tried to just out and out copy a lot of times. I mean, he's definitely very entertaining and definitely very athletic, and that was something that I thought played to my strengths, and so I tried to be as much like him as I could.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, he's obviously one of the few guys that they kind of brought together the art of entertaining the crowd while still putting on a good match at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he was one who was never, as one of the guys who was never like 280 pounds and 6'8". He definitely went out there and used what he had and made the most of it rather than looking at it like a shortcoming, like sometimes WWE would make you see or make you think.
Well, I mean, it comes down to, I mean, really, everyone used to credit ECW for kind of covering up the weaknesses of some wrestlers, but in many ways, it's sometimes up to the wrestler themselves to kind of mask their own weaknesses.
But yeah, definitely. You definitely want to go out there and do the things that you can do and play to your strengths as much as possible. But, I mean, that really has more to do with your work in the ring. I think the thing that ECW did so well was put together programs and stories that helped the wrestler portray a character up to a certain point. Once he got in the ring, it was kind of up to him to wrestle his style. But I mean, in between that, the people that he wrestled, the programs that they did, that had a lot to do with the creative teams at that point.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you can go back, I mean, not counting Shawn Michaels, as we mentioned before, but if you can go back and have a match against anybody in history from any company, who would it be, and why would you choose them?
I'd probably have to say Rick Steamboat, that I was a big fan of, not just as a wrestler being trained, but even before that when I was just a fan watching it. I was always a fan of his work, and, and I even before I understood pro wrestling as I do today as a wrestler, I mean, I was someone who appreciated his efforts and his hard work, and then, once you learn what pro wrestling is about and you look at his stuff, it takes on a whole new meaning. So I'd probably have to say Rick Steamboat.
Okay. All right, man. In closing, before I let you go, I mean, you got a lot of fans out there. Anything you want to say to them, people who are listening to hear from you?
Well, just basically, I'd like to say thanks. I mean, a lot of my success has been because of the fan support that I've always had, whether it was on the independent scene or overseas or at Ring of Honor or TNA. I mean, a lot of that has to do with the people that have followed me from the very beginning. So I appreciate that support, and TNA appreciates that support. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think the company is still going strong and making steps to becoming bigger every day is because of the fan support. And so, I mean, I definitely appreciate it, and I don't know if wrestlers ever get a chance to say it often enough, but I'll say it now. Thanks for everything. Thanks for the support.
That's really cool, man. Chris, thanks so much for being on the show, man.
All right, thank you.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
So, there you go, guys. The TNA X Division Champion, the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels, joining us on the phone for JG's Radio Free Insanity. Just another one of our many guests that we've had on here every week, trying to get people from all different segments of the industry. We've had everyone on here from Matt Morgan to AJ Styles to Spike Dudley to Samoa Joe to Jimmy Hart to Nick Bockwinkel. I mean, you name them. And we've tried to get them on. And we're going to keep doing that for you guys, too. So definitely keep coming back. Keep checking back. We're going to try to bring you as many different diverse guests as we can to give you some insight into the industry. Talk a little bit about some of the psychology as we do each week. Talk a little bit about some people's feelings on the current wrestling landscape and things like that, things that have always intrigued me. One of the things I wanted to do when I first started this show was kind of pick the brains of a lot of these wrestlers, people who have been in the industry, about the psychology of everything and how they feel about the way the business is being played out. So we've been doing that. I've been having a lot of fun doing it. Chris Daniels, great guest to have on. Very excited. Remember, guys, come back. Come back on Monday. Come back next week. We're going to be back with another JG's Radio Free Insanity. And next Friday, we should have an announcement during the week about who the next guest will be. It's been a hell of a lot of fun. So until we next meet, this is James Gutman saying thank you guys so much for clicking away. Be well. And thanks for sharing our insanity.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.